Good evening. Welcome to the U.S. House debate in Heritage Hall at Great Falls College, MSU. Thanks to Susan Wolf and the college for providing the venue. Tonight's event is sponsored by the Great Falls Tribune and the Montana Farmers Union. Candidates for tonight's debate are incumbent Republican U.S. Representative Ryan Zinke, who is serving his first term, Democratic challenger Denise Juneau, the State Superintendent of Public Instruction, and Libertarian candidate Rick Breckenridge of Proctor. I'm Richard Ecke, Viewpoints Editor of the Great Falls Tribune. I'd like to welcome those watching live streaming video on ABC Fox Montana and Star Radio, and listening online or over the air on Yellowstone Public Radio, Montana Public Radio, KGPR, Cherry Creek Radio, Northern Broadcasting, and other media outlets. Our panelists tonight are Raleigh Schlepp, board member of the Montana Farmers Union, Angela Marshall, ABC Fox Montana News anchor, and Peter Johnson, veteran Great Falls Tribune reporter. Let's get started with opening statements of 3 minutes per candidate. Names were drawn at random. Our first speaker will be Denise Juneau, followed by Ryan Zinke, and then Rick Breckenridge. Ms. Juneau.
Thank you so much, and I just want to begin by thanking the Farmers, Montana Farmers Union, the Great Falls Tribune, and ABC Fox for hosting this debate, and thank my opponents for being here as well, my competitors. My name's Denise Juneau, and I also want to just give a shout out and just give my condolences to Mike Fellow's family and friends. He was a great advocate for the Libertarian Party, made sure that those values and principles were at every table in every political race. And so just want to do that, and also want to welcome Mr. Breckenridge to the race. My name's Denise Juneau, and my story actually takes me from Head Start to Harvard, and from teaching in a classroom in Browning to leading Montana's public schools. I've had the honor of being your state superintendent for the last 7.5 years. Attending classrooms all across the state, small schools and large schools, and always so proud of the work that's going on in our schools, seeing good teachers teaching, seeing students learning, and seeing community support of their schools. I also have an initiative, Graduation Matters Montana. Works with 58 communities across the state, and that work has actually increased graduation rates to historic highs, and that boosts our economy by millions every year. Also made job training a priority as superintendent, and I see more career centers, more apprenticeships, more internships happening across our state, partnering with businesses, partnering with hospitals, partnering with community entities, and so proud of that work that's going on. Also really happy to be here in Great Falls. I grew up in Browning on the Blackfeet Reservation, and this was sort of our town to come to, and now my parents and my niece live here, so I get to actually visit quite often. Proud to be just a small part of Graduation Matters Great Falls and the great work they're doing here in the school district, and congratulations on passing your levy, by the way. Shows good community support. I'm also a member of the State Land Board, and through that work have increased access to public lands, tens of thousands of acres in this state, done responsible resource development. We've cut trees. Put people to work in the woods. I've voted to expand our state's largest underground coal mine. We dabble in oil and gas in the Bakken, and recently also just approved solar development. And so proud of the work that's going on in the State Land Board as well. We have one voice for 1 million Montanans in this U.S. House race. That voice should be somebody who has a record of accomplishment, who's been working shoulder to shoulder with communities across this state to get things done. And I'd be honored to serve as your next congresswoman for the state of Montana.
Mr. Zinke.
Well, it's great to be in Great Falls. You know, and I think a lot of us watched the vice presidential debates last night. And it was interesting, a lot of personal attacks and false accusations. And I think America and Montana can do better. So tonight, I'm going to focus on the issues. Let's start with the economy. There's been two presidents in my lifetime that I think had it right, is tax policy. One was John F. Kennedy, who spoke here in 1963, and the other was Ronald Reagan. And both of them right. Lowering taxes and rolling back regulation creates jobs, opportunity, and growth. And whether it's personal taxes or small businesses or corporations, lowering taxes and rolling back regulations makes a strong America. And having a strong America makes a safer world. Secondly, national defense, to include our borders. A nation without borders cannot exist. And that's why I've been so hard on refugees. It's not that we don't want refugees, we want to vet refugees. Since last election, children and women refugees have been arrested in Paris for terrorism. We have had ISIS-influenced attacks in Minnesota, state of Washington, New York, New Jersey. For those that don't think unvetted refugees or ISIS-influenced terrorism is a threat, you're just not looking. Immigration. Our policy in this country on immigration is costing America about $297 billion. $297 billion. So when we talk about our parks, $10 billion being behind in infrastructure. We talk about infrastructure across Montana, our water, our highways. We need to fix our immigration so it doesn't cost us that much money, and we need to prioritize where our taxpayer dollars go. Public lands. Let me make it clear. I am not in favor of selling or transferring public lands. I have voted 17 times to support public lands and LWCF. I'm the single voice in our delegation that voted for LWCF when it counted, so it wasn't defunded. The Billings Gazette and Verbatim both have looked at accusations against me, and they are false. So those that think that I want to sell public lands, transfer, are wrong and lying. Lastly, Second Amendment. I fought most of my life for the Second Amendment. All our constitutional freedoms should be a guarantee, and they're not negotiable.
Thank you.
So with that, I look forward to a good debate on the issues tonight.
Mr. Breckenridge.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for the welcome to Great Falls. Insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. This panel tonight is going to pose questions that are the direct cause and effect of the policies and the decisions of the two-party system that we have. My name is Rick Breckenridge. I'm a surveyor from Proctor. That's in Lake County. And no one calls me unless they have a problem. No one calls me unless they have a problem that they want solved and they want it settled. The Libertarian Party, no exception. Because that's what we do, we solve problems. When this country was called upon to make its declaration against Great Britain, they didn't call upon a teacher or a Navy SEAL, they called upon a surveyor, Thomas Jefferson. And when they decided to raise an army, they didn't call on a school teacher or a Navy SEAL, they called upon another surveyor, George Washington. And to hold this country together when it was ripped apart at its fabric like we're seeing today, they call upon another surveyor, Abraham Lincoln, to pull it together. I say that not as a tribute to surveyors, but more as the thought processes that surveyors have to employ. All right, if you've ever used the cadastral mapping project, my influence is all over it, but you'll never see my name anywhere on it. In 1993, I was hired by Flathead County to computerize the mapping system. And we worked together. We found out there were four other counties, Cascade County, Eric Spandenberg up here in Cascade, Doug Burson in Missoula, Stu Kirkpatrick. We got together and we formed a GIS coalition. And with that coalition, we sold the vision to the state of Montana because the Department of Revenue controlled 30 of the 56 counties of their tax base. And they had deplorable records. Then we got the federal government involved, and born out of that, because each of us realized that the end result was greater than the sum of the parts. And we worked together, and you have the cadastral mapping project because of that. Now, you just heard Ryan say that he'd never sell public lands. Well, let me tell you, I mapped. He's never been to Georgetown, or he's never been to Peaburg. I mapped those cities, those little towns. And there's little slivers of public land in there, less than a tenth of an acre. How are you going to manage that? How can you get to it? Unless you've been in the trenches and you know. I'm Rick Breckenridge, and I look forward to a nice debate, and thank you all for inviting me. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now we turn to our panel, and the first question from Peter Johnson goes first to Mr. Zinke.
Alps Air Force Base in Great Falls maintains and protects nuclear missiles as its prime mission, and that may be, and the missiles may be obsolete in less than 15 years. What would you do to help keep the base open or find a new mission?
That's a good question. The triad has long been proven ineffective, and so we do need a triad. Our ground-based missiles are the most reliable and the most cost-effective. As your congressman, I recently put an initiative to make sure the helicopters are updated because they need to be updated. Great Falls is interesting. One of the big keys of Montana is also the Hayes Mullet, which is a military operations area. It's about the same size as the peninsula of Florida. That's underutilized. And so Great Falls has great potential to be a training base, as it should. The last series of BRACs, which we may go through a new BRAC, what it did is it cut the train areas too much, and our forces are having a hard time training. We're stacked up in Ellis. We're stacked up at the Goldwater Range. I think Great Falls is a great opportunity to be a training base and enlarge that mission. I'm feeling pretty optimistic about the future of Great Falls. I don't think the missiles are going to go anywhere. We do need to upgrade them. There are some concerns on the classified side about Russia moving ahead on missiles. But in general, I think we need to upgrade the missiles. We need to make sure the train air is utilized. And we need to make sure the base itself, there are some improvements on the base that we need to look at and do. And I think most of those were in this last defense appropriations bill that we're waiting for the Senate to move up the field.
Mr. Breckenridge.
I was an 18-year-old young recruit, enlisted in the Army, and they stuck me to a nuclear weapons depot in Germany. And the nuclear deterrent was a very formidable part of the Cold War. And that process in Europe now has diminished to where that, you know, 35 years or 40 years ago when I was over there, that they're no longer there. You know, we have to look at the overall strategic defense of the United States and Malmstrom's place in that. And as you know, when I was surveying out in Malta in 1984, we had B-52 bombing runs, you know, out there in the middle of public land. And that mission is different now. So we kind of have to roll with the flow and ride with the tide. The changes that need to be made are a matter of congressional oversight with the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And so I look forward to a very in-depth discussion on that strategic mission and the importance of Montana's role in that. The strategic missiles, you know, we got, like Ryan said, they're outdated missiles. What's our force, what's our deterrent, and what's our target? We got to look at the mission and keep to the mission.
Ms. Juneau.
A state superintendent, I actually have a commission on military children and families and have visited Great Falls often and Loy Elementary. And Loy Elementary here in Great Falls, 90% of the students that attend school there are connected to the military. And so I've sat and visited with the students there. I've visited with the families there. And as a part of that commission, I actually got to go on Malmstrom and hear about their mission. And that mission is still critical to this country. It's the best nuclear deterrent we have, most cost-effective nuclear deterrent we still have. So we need to do everything that we can. The silos and the weapons definitely need to be modernized. We need to work on that issue, but we need to maintain the mission. We need to protect the base, make sure it stays here in Montana and Great Falls, and we have to work on trying to get the flying mission back as well. But what I see, you know, we work with a lot of the families on transition issues. These are students that are coming from all across the globe and places that in different countries, and I just think Great Falls Schools does a fantastic job of making sure those families are taken care of, that the transitions are into the system are well done, and you know those families are connected to Malmstrom, and we need to do everything we can to make sure that they maintain their mission and we protect the base here.
Next question from Angela, and the first person to answer will be Mr. Breckenridge.
The city of Missoula recently passed an ordinance strengthening background checks on private gun sales and purchases. Do you think the council's action was appropriate? And please explain.
Council's action was unconstitutional. That action by a body has violated the Montana Constitution, and each one of them need to review their oath of office. That action to say that they are now the reviewing authority of background checks is a usurpation of a power that we never gave them. We the people never gave that to them. They just took it. So I would just say, you know what? Here's my concealed carry card. And if that ain't good enough for you, then I have my constitution. And this is what's gonna direct the city of Missoula and that city council. They are so far out of line that I'm surprised the Attorney General hasn't said whoa, and I would expect that. So that's, was I passionate enough on that answer? Thank you very much.
Ms. Juno is next.
Well, I would say, despite the ads you see put out by my opponent across the state, I'm actually a strong supporter of the Second Amendment. You know, I grew up near a ranch. My dad took me out and we learned to fish. He taught me to shoot a gun out on the Juno Ranch, and there is a strong tradition of Second Amendment rights in this state, of making sure that we're passing down those beloved traditions to the next generation, and I'm a strong supporter of that. I do believe that there are enough laws on the books that we need to enforce those laws that are currently there. Right now, I am a proponent of, there's a bill moving through Congress of keeping guns out of the hands of criminals and terrorists, and Congress can't even take that step. And that, it, I think, strengthens the rights of law-abiding citizens, responsible gun ownership, and we need to move that forward.
Mr. Zinke.
Well, Denise, you're referring to the no-fly list. Who's on the no-fly list, and how do you get on it? It's a secret. But more importantly, how do you get off of it? So if your rights can be taken away from you from the government, and you have petitioned the government to get those rights back, what other rights are sacred? It'd be the same for freedom of religion. It'd be the same for freedom of speech. That's why the no-fly list is dangerous. Most of the no-fly list are foreigners. But who else has been on the no-fly list? Senator Ted Kennedy. Congressman McClintock. That's the problem, is you cede the government too much authority and they abuse it. And that's why no one trusts the government right now. So with rights come responsibilities. All rights come with responsibilities. But Denise, you did support the Democratic platform to restrict buying a weapon on the no-fly list. The problem is if you can restrict the Second Amendment right, then you open up for every right in the Constitution. And there is no other right that you can have to petition to get it back when the government takes away. So we have to be very, very careful when we mess with the Constitution, because that is the one and single issue that keeps our country together and keeps our rights sacred.
The next question from Raleigh goes first to Denise.
Do you support the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal, and why?
No, I believe in fair trade, and I don't think the Trans-Pacific Partnership agreement right now is fair to our producers. It's not transparent. there needs to be congressional oversight. My, you know, Congressman Zinke actually voted to fast track the TPP. That means he put it in the hands of President Obama to push it forward without congressional oversight. He'll say that he had a bill that put some Congress people in the room, but that's all it did. It didn't provide them a voice. It doesn't provide them oversight. They get to sit and watch what happens. So I oppose the TPP. I don't think it's fair to producers. I think it needs to be more transparent. I think it needs more congressional oversight. And that's where I stand on that issue.
Ryan, what about the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
Well, Denise, you should really read the TPA, which was the predecessor of it. It didn't fast track it. What it did is it provided transparency so we all could read what was in it. It also set 150 conditions on it. So the TPP itself, there is no bill before Congress, so it's not going to be voted on. And most of the ag is in favor of the TPA. Farmers Union is one of the units that is not. And I agree with your conditions on it, because some of the TPA is about sovereignty. Whose rules apply? In the United States, our rules should apply. And a fundamental problem with the TPA was negotiated with too many countries that are dissimilar in economies. So when you negotiate a trade deal, which we need trade, because we're an ag-centric state and we need to trade and send our coal and send our commodities. But when you negotiate a deal with too many dissimilar countries, what comes out of the sausage factory oftentimes in things is not in our best interest. Both presidential candidates have said they oppose TPA. That's important, because what we'll see after this election is the TPA is not going to be voted on. I think it needs to be renegotiated. But the strength of our commodities part, we need certainty in our commodities. So when you deliver a commodity to a foreign shore, it is paid for and accepted, and we get paid for it.
Okay, Rick is next.
Ladies and gentlemen, let's stop the insanity. Didn't we learn our lesson when the Canadians dumped their timber on our markets in the 80s? Haven't we learned our lesson? He's talking about this fair here, this isn't fair. Yeah, that's exactly right. Every time these two same wings of the same bird of prey get together, we get screwed. Every time. All right? So they're debating here the fine points of how it's going to happen. All right? How is it going to happen? Is it going to be the farmers? Is it going to be? No, they're going to stop. Is it going to be the commodity producers? Is it going to be the coal miners? No. You know what? Stop the insanity. Every deal that these guys have come up with have done nothing but harm not only our families, they harmed our economy. They've harmed every one of us, affected every one of us in this room. Come on, stop it. Knock off the insanity. I'm sick and tired of it. Thank you. I'm passionate about it.
Mr. Johnson has the next question. It will start with Representative Zinke.
How can Montana create good-paying jobs with the future so uncertain for Montana coal miners and Colstrip power plant workers?
Well, it's going to be challenging if Colstrip goes down, and this is why. Montana's a long ways away from markets. We have to manufacture. And if our energy prices go up, then how are we going to be competitive? We have to, the variables are wages. You have to pay our people. But you have to transport our goods. And without affordable energy, we're just not very competitive. So that's a problem. And I was at ADF today, and they said the same thing. If Colstrip goes away and energy costs raise even 15%, they're not going to be competitive. The same thing with a refinery in Billings and a refinery in Great Falls here and the mine in Butte still. So having energy, and it's all the above, but taking coal out of our mix is a disaster for Montana. And we have to have manufacturing jobs. If you think that just service jobs or ag is going to carry the state, you know, I beg to differ from you. Is it ag is a big part of Montana, still the big, and I think will probably remain our number one. But behind it, we have to have manufacturing. We have to have service industry jobs. All jobs are important in Montana. So that is what's at stake with Colstrip. And I don't agree with keeping the ground. We can do it better. We can do it safer. Put money into research. That's where we should be putting our investment to make our coal, our oil, our fossil fuels, all the above, more efficient, cleaner, and better over time.
Mr. Breckinridge.
Ladies and gentlemen, our governor has turned coal into a four-letter word. And we have got to take it back. You guys down in Colstrip, there's a war on you. All right? We've heard not only the governor, but also Hillary Clinton say that we're going to shut down all of the coal-fired generators that we have for electricity. Where are we going to get the energy? Where are we going to get the electricity to produce? Coal is as clean as we have put money into researching it. Right, we got 4,000 years of it in the ground. Now, those jobs, those lives, those livelihoods, instead we've taken and invested in wind energy, you know, 20 bucks a megawatt for coal fire. Now we're investing, what, $200 a megawatt in wind. Take that money. We'll retire those old generators as the technology comes along. We got nanotechnology now that can solve a whole lot of problems. Let's apply it into this process and into this solution, and let's get Montana moving on coal. I mean, look at, you take the potash and make bricks out of it. All right, it's good. It works. They do it in England, in Scotland. It's good stuff. There's good benefits for it, but we do have to be very, very careful. And we'll research this out, and we'll get it sorted out. Thank you.
No.
Superintendent Juneau.
Yeah. We are here in the Electric City. I mean, there's hydro, there's wind here. I can travel all across the state, and there's energy everywhere. And I've actually been down to Colstrip and toured the plants and talked to the workers there and actually earned the endorsement of the workers there because they know I'm going to be on their side in this issue. Coal's not going away. It's still a big producer of electricity, but we do need to move forward, and we need to figure out the way forward, but we need to work with those coal-reliant communities to find the pathway forward. The prices right now of natural gas are beating out coal. The prices of coal are super low. The prices of oil and gas are super low. I can go up to the Bakken area and see oil trucks on the side of the road. It's about price, you know, and instead of being political posturing, bombastic rhetoric about this whole thing, we need to get down to business and work with those coal-reliant communities, those energy-reliant communities, and figure out the path forward. Climate change is real. We can talk to any farmer in this state, and they know growing seasons are changing. They're having to change their crops. Their growing seasons are different. And so we need to work with those coal-reliant communities, make sure that we're protecting them as much as possible, and then figure out a pathway forward.
Well, folks, we're in the debate tonight. This is our momentary stop for a rebuttal. Each candidate gets 1 minute. If he or she disagreed with anything that they've heard before, they are able to rebut it. So, Mr. Breckinridge goes first. Do you disagree with anything that's been said by your opponents?
Well, I'd challenge, first of all, the tour of the Bakken, because you didn't find those oil wells in Montana. You know, Montana regulation is so overburdening on that. There's 64 different laws, rules, and regulations just to flush your toilet, let alone get an oil well up. All right? That coal has to be a major piece of our economic viability. All right? The public lands issue that Mr. Zinke brought up, he hasn't been on the ground. All right? He hasn't had to go out there. I'd take him out on line with me and cut a line, but it cost me $4 an hour to put a chainsaw on your hand to go out and cut the line. I'm in the trenches, and I have to live with these guys' decisions. And let me tell you, they're poor. They're very poor because the overgrowth, the land... Come out with me. Walk a mile down a line, and I'll show you what the result of it is. You can see private on one side and a crap, the dog hair on the other. That's their policy.
Okay, Mr. Zinke, would you like to rebut anything?
I really don't have a rebuttal. I think, actually, Denise and I are pretty similar in what we said about coal energy. It is all of the above. I think part of the reason why coal is under pressure is because it's death by a thousand cuts. As it isn't that natural gas prices are lower than what coal can be produced. A lot of it is coal itself has undergone enormous amount of pressure on overregulation. It's difficult to move their product. There's still markets overseas, but we've lost the ability to ship it out. And shipping it out in Montana is important. And if you look at global warming as an example, if you think that energy in the United States, we are better at producing energy, more efficient and cleaner than watching energy be produced overseas. That's clear. I've seen it. So it is better to produce energy here, coal, all the above, and ship it overseas than it is to watch it being produced overseas with no regulation at all.
Ms. Juneau, do you disagree with anything you've heard in the last half hour? You have 1 minute.
You know, we've had two debates, the congressman and I, and both times he's been fact-checked as being wrong in those debates. And I'd like to remind him, you know, I see the ads he has out, that he's not running for president. We are running for the United States House of Representatives, the sole voice for Montana. And Montanans deserve to hear from you about your record, about our visions, about where we want to move Montana. They deserve to hear why you voted to shut down Department of Homeland Security, putting Americans at risk. They deserve to know why you voted against equal pay for equal work for women. They deserve why you voted. They deserve why you voted to slash Pell Grants so young people can't get a leg up. And I would like to know why you signed a pledge to sell or transfer America's public lands to states and to private interests.
You want 20 seconds to say anything about that?
Well, in your newest ad, Denise, equal pay for equal women, which I agree with, but your newest ad references two procedure votes that had nothing to do with it. I think you should check your facts. And when you say I vote against a transfer or sell public land, that's a flat-out lie.
I said you signed a pledge.
That's a flat-out lie that I ever would agree to selling public land. The Billings Gazette verbatim called you on it, and you know it. Homeland Defense, the bill itself was unconstitutional because it had an amnesty provision for illegal immigrants. And as your congressman, I will never vote for a bill that is unconstitutional.
Okay, let's wrap it up.
And the Fifth Circuit agreed with me.
Okay, thank you. Okay, here we're back to our panelists. Angela will have her question goes first to Denise Juneau.
State figures show the median lifespan for American Indians in Montana is roughly 19 years shorter than with whites. How would you improve these health numbers, and what can the federal government do to help?
When we look at health care of Native Americans and on our reservations, I'm from Brownie, Montana. I'm on the Blackfeet Reservation. I hear stories from the Indian Health Service. I think every Indian who accesses that health care has stories of not great service, and we need to do better around Indian health care. Right now, under the Affordable Care Act, thousands of American Indians now have access to other opportunities in health care. That's a good first step. We need to reform Indian health care service. We need to make sure that American Indians have access to Indian health care service, Indian health service, and we need to do better on that front. We need to make sure that there's preventive care on reservations around all these diseases. You know, I grew up with relatives who had diabetes and had to go to take care of that they grew up with all these other things. If we do better on the front side and on the preventive side, we can do better on the outcomes.
Ryan Zinke.
You know, with the tribes, I think it's respect. It is honor our treaty obligations, which we have not. I think also you look at Indian health. First of all, Obamacare has been a disaster. Even President Clinton says it's craziness. That's President Bill Clinton. It's craziness. So, you know, how do we make it better? Well, one, preventive medicine is a part of it. But in Montana, you can't have a $10,000 deductible and ask a family to pay $1,200 a year for health care. We don't make that much. And I've been to Lane Deer. I've looked at the lines of people coming in. They can only see so many people. There's a long line. They get to the point. They cut it off. You know what? And the people come back again and again and again and never get seen. And the doctor at the clinic doesn't have the authority to do the right thing. He's got to ask some level of bureaucracy. So if we want to fix health care, you got to fix it at the front line. That means give the physicians the authority to make the decision. Get back to if you like your doctor, you should be able to keep it. If you like your insurance, we should be able to keep that. We should look at telemedicine. In Montana, the Medicare rates should be improved so we're at par. We're not. In the United States, when you look at D.C., we're frontier medicine. I challenge you to find where frontier is even mentioned. So that's why I have a loud voice, because we're Montana, we matter, and frontier medicine counts.
Rick Breckenridge.
To my brothers and sisters on the reservation, we owe you one big apology, because we always experiment on you. Socialized medicine does not work. It fails you at every step. Every step. So we have, what, one more government program? What did I say at the beginning? We're going to talk about issues that have come up, 150 years of Indian policy that has absolutely failed, and now it's in the health. All right, 19 years. That is unacceptable. And I'm not going to fault Indian Health Service. They're doing what they can, but that's the limit of socialized medicine. We need competition for that health service and those health dollars. Preventive care. We're always, you know, saw the long lines at Lame Deer. That wasn't for preventive care. That was to get the insulin. That was to get the psychotropic drugs to keep the depression down. All right? Let's stop the insanity. Let's stop it. And we got to stop experimenting on our brothers and sisters on the reservation.
Next question from Raleigh goes to Mr. Zinke.
The average age of farmers and ranchers is 58 to 60 years old. Limited access to land and capital are barriers for young people. What plan do you have to encourage and support the next generation of agricultural production in this country?
Our smaller communities across Montana, you need three things to make a community healthy. You need a bank that can loan. So you look at Dodd-Frank and these one-size-fits-all, these smaller community banks can't loan the money even if they know the farmers and ranchers are good for it. So we have a capital problem. Second is schools. We need schools. And you look at the consolidation of schools, the pressure on schools, on funding on schools, and lastly, hospitals. Is that if you don't have a hospital in our small town, that means mom and dad can't live there. If mom and dad can't live there, that means there's no families. If there's no families, then our community is shut down. And we see an enormous amount of pressure on rural communities across Montana, Dakotas, Idaho, and it's the same. So you look at the cost of land over time. I mean, who can enter? If a cost of a ranch now is 5 or 6, you know, 1,000 acres, and you look at what that really means in terms of capital, how can you afford that? So we have challenges on that. One is we got to look at the death tax. That should be gotten rid of. Because when the government is taking so much money and you're trying to pass your property to the next generation, if you have a death tax, it's not possible to do that. So I'd say the death tax, make sure the community banks are freedom of make sure we can lend the money, and get rid of the one-size-fits-all from Washington, D.C. That'll be enormously helpful.
Mr. Breckenridge.
I was listening real hard for the answer, Nat, and I don't quite, I think I lost the question. But here's my observation on it. I'm in the land. I'm in the land business. And we've already had two people up here say they will never, never sell any public land. How many of those ranches out here in eastern Montana have little 40-acre tracts wedged in there surrounded by private land? I know there's a lot of them because I surveyed them. I monumented them when I worked for the BLM. We need more space. 58 years old, the reason that the young guys can't come up and land's more expensive, guess what? There isn't any available. And here we are sitting in these unmanageable tracts of land, 40 acres, 80 acres, in the middle of prime farmland that they fence off because they don't want no one touching it. It's unmanageable. And it needs to be examined by people who have the skills, who have the knowledge, and the land, and how the master title plat works. I doubt if either one of these two have ever seen a master title plat or know what an HI is, a historical index. All right? There's solutions out here for those. And those solutions reside right here in BLM land that's wedged in, surrounded by private land that that could be sold at appraised value because they cannot manage it. And it needs to be put in the hands of people who will.
Ms. Juneau.
So like I said earlier, I grew up and we went out to our family ranch all the time. And I get the struggles of people trying to pass on that tradition to the next generation and to keep that heritage going. You know, I learned how to ride horse out there, and my dad taught me to shoot a gun out there, and I learned to fish on the ranch, and I went to brandings and butcherings out there, and I get what that's like, and I get why that's a treasured part of our history and our heritage. You know, there are things in the Farm Bill that we need to start looking at. We need to make sure the loans for families and young families and families moving in who want to carry on that tradition, those loans are there, that the safety net provisions in the Farm Bill are present so that we can make sure that that land is handed down generation to generation. One thing that I do as superintendent is I've been a big proponent of farm to school. And right now there are caps in the Farm Bill, which is part of USDA that I administer, and there are caps, and if we raise those caps, I mean, I visited with my friend who is a cattle rancher, and she said she is tired of watching her cattle head out on trucks going to Nebraska and then watching them come back on Cisco boxes. If there was a way to partner more with our local schools, who are the largest purchaser of food in our state, it's a win-win for all. And so there are things that can happen in that direction.
Next question from Peter Johnson goes first to Rick Breckenridge.
Placing U.S. troops on foreign soil is never easy. Where and under what circumstances would you support missions that place boots on the ground?
I was 17 years in the Army. I was a captain of the infantry. And let me tell you, the way that we have done this has been circumventing Congress is absolutely unacceptable. I heard Ryan on the radio the other day talking about the 500 troops that went into Syria. And instead of saying, what the hell are they doing in there? We didn't give the president authorization to do it. He was saying, no, we're going to bundle up some helicopters and send them out over there, put another brigade in there. We're going to go from, you know, for every man that you put on the line when I was on active duty, we had to have 9 people in support for every rifleman. Putting troops in the ground, unless there is a national interest that is defined, debated, and agreed upon by Congress, no troops at no time on foreign soil.
Denise Juneau.
So those are really hard decisions. And, you know, I respect people who served in the military. I respect these two guys up here for providing military service to our country, maintaining our freedoms. And I thank all of you who are in the military or have served our country. Thank you so much for doing that. You know, there are pockets of instability across the globe, and there are terrorism threats, and we watch it played out across the globe and even here at home. And first and foremost on all these decisions. Above all, we need to make sure American safety is taken care of and in front of our minds for both here and those Americans abroad. But we also need to work with our allies. We need to collaborate when we can, but we must confront when we must. We have the best military in the world. And when American safety comes into jeopardy, we need to think really long and hard about what it is we're going to do. Those are not easy decisions. But I also know that when we send people into harm's way and our military is out there, we need to take care of them when they come home. We need to make sure that we are providing the health care they need, the job training they need, the mental health services they need, and we need to make sure that we're doing all that we can to meet those obligations.
Ryan Zinke.
Well, I do agree, Rick, that the Congress should have the say about authorization to use military force. And I'm an advocate for it, and I've signed multiple documents on it, and I'm saying that when you put troops into harm's way, it should be a decision that is taken very seriously. And this is from a father who also is, my daughter's a Navy diver, my son-in-law is a Navy SEAL active, and I've seen war. And I don't want any of you and any of your children to ever see war. But there are times when we must fight. And if we're going to fight, then we got to fight to win. That means before we enter into an engagement, make sure we have the right training, the right equipment, and the right rules of engagement to win decisively on the field of battle. And if we decide to go ahead, then we have to give them the right support. So I disagree with 600 because I don't think it's enough. Because if one of our guys gets hit over there, I want him in an American hospital, in American transportation in less than an hour. That means a field hospital, that means a medevac, and that takes bodies and people. And when you add up, if we get in trouble in there, I want American armor to go get our kids. I don't want to depend on some other force. And that takes bodies and people. So when you add it up, if we're going to go to war with sufficient force to win. But this administration has long been absolutely doing the minimum, and the rules of engagement are tying our hands so our kids can't fight and win. Period.
Okay, we're going to do a question from the audience. What would you do to protect the rights of lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transsexual individuals? That question first goes to Denise Juno.
Oh, that's an awesome question for me. Number one, get elected. You know, this is a historic election in many, many ways. We haven't had a woman serve in Congress from the state of Montana since Jeanette Rankin. Montana are trailblazers in their votes. We elected a woman before women had the right to vote. A century later, it's time for another woman to serve in Congress. We also have never had an American Indian woman serve in Congress from anywhere in the country. That's what can happen this election cycle when you elect me. We also have not ever had an openly gay federal candidate. You know, those are all bonuses that Montanans get when they elect me. And representation matters. I've watched it happen at the state legislature with American Indians at the table in record numbers in our state legislature. The type of policy that gets talked about, the stereotypes that get broken down, all those, representation matters. And I've watched the discourse change at the state legislature. With me at the table in Congress, the discourse changes again. You know, that we bond together, we make sure that everybody's looked out to. That's what I've done as state superintendent, is made sure every student who steps through the doors of a public school, and this is the work of our local school boards across the state too, are safe, protected, and have safe learning spaces. I'm an advocate for that. I'll continue to be an advocate for all Montanans when I get elected.
Mr. Zinke.
Well, Denise, I've spent most of my life fighting to protect the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And part of the Constitution is your right, freedom of religion, freedom of expression. It's not my right to dictate how you think or what you do. And so I do support you. If you want to be lesbian, you want to be Muslim, you want to be whatever. Doesn't matter to me. It doesn't matter.
Please.
It doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter in Montana, and it doesn't really matter in this election, because Montanans generally aren't that way. What's important is you have the right to be you. And all of us have the right to be us. And that's what I believe. It doesn't matter to me whether you're a woman or a man. It doesn't matter to me religion. As a military officer, it didn't matter to me the religious or the political affiliation of the person next to me. What mattered was me, the quality of the person, whether or not you were dedicated to the mission, and whether you loved your country. That's what matters in America, and that's what makes America so strong. Our diversity in message, our diversity in thought, but our unity as an American, because we are American first.
Mr. Breckinridge.
Welcome to the Libertarian Party. We've only been advocating that since 1971. Ladies and gentlemen, what we have said was, and what we have always said in our platform, is that keep the government out of our bedrooms, keep the government off our Constitution, and keep the government out of what we want to ingest into our bodies, all right? Now, it's, you know, she's a libertarian. I had Mike Fellows tell me that one time. He says, Rick, you're a rhino. I said, Mike, what do you mean? He says, well, you're a libertarian. You're not a Republican. I'm going to tell Denise tonight, you know what? You're a libertarian. So, welcome to the party. And for those of us that think that we need specialized rights, we don't. All right? That Constitution protects you and your freedoms like it protects mine from anyone coming in and saying, no, you can't do that. No, you can't have that idea. The freedom of expression that we've had in this country has been remarkable. And the way that we've accepted ideas foreign to maybe our upbringing has helped make us who we are today. So do we need a special law? No. Constitution protects everybody's right equally, not specialized rights.
Okay, it's time for closing statements.
Our it's over.
First closing is by Rick Breckinridge, Libertarian candidate. 2 minutes.
2 minutes, all right. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to make an appeal tonight, because tonight we ride. And I want you to know that libertarians have never harmed anybody. I'm going to make an appeal tonight to voters across Indian country. A special appeal. I want you to think about when you go to the poll to honor not only your families and your ancestors, but to remember that it was a Democrat that was responsible for the Trail of Tears and Andrew Jackson. That it was a Democrat and Benjamin Harrison who was responsible for Wounded Knee. All right? And from the Big Hole to the Big Horn. All right? It was these two parties who did what you guys are experiencing today. Wasn't a libertarian. I want you to think and to vote real hard. Think hard. Vote libertarian. And to the millennials out here, the 151,000 of you who voted for Bernie Sanders, how you felt that burn when you first heard his message. And then you felt that burn when you found out that the DNC rigged the gig from the inside. I want you to feel the burn one more time and make them feel that burn that you felt. And to you Republicans out here who looked at Ryan Zinke's support of the Second Amendment, he got a B from the Montana Sports Shooting Association. He wouldn't even answer the Gun Owners of America. All right? If you look back, he's a 42%er from the NRA. All right? I want you guys to come back into the system. Remember, you got an advocate in the Libertarian Party for the Second Amendment. That's right here, right where you need to be. You guys who heard the call of the doctor and were marginalized and shoved to the side, you got a place right here. Vote Libertarian. Stop the insanity now.
Closing statement by Denise Juno, Democratic candidate.
Well, Mr. Breckinridge, I think I might actually have a little libertarian streak. So no. I think you've seen a real stark contrast between Congressman Zinke and myself on this stage. You see somebody and you can watch his record and you can ask him about it. I'm still waiting to see why he signed a pledge to sell America's, to transfer America's public lands to states and to private interests. Still waiting to hear a lot of answers about a lot of the votes that he's taken, to hear why he's supporting a presidential candidate who is divisive in this country, but missing critical votes to do that. There's a lot that Congressman Zinke has to answer that he hasn't. There are stock contracts. You get somebody who's going to put Montana's people, land, and economy when you vote for me. We're going to put that first. We're not going to be out stumping for the presidential candidate, missing critical votes. We're not going to be looking out for what the next best thing for Congressman Zinke is. We're going to look out for Montana's people, land, and economy. In addition to all those things you get when you elect me to Congress, you also get somebody who's qualified, who's competent, and actually has a record of getting things done for this state. I've worked with communities across this state, raising graduation rates to historic highs, generating millions in revenue for this state, made job training a priority, and we see students, young people now stepping in, career ready, going in with apprenticeships and internships. We see our schools, we see levies passing, we see our public coming back into public education. I'm proud of that record. I have a record on the state land board of increasing access tens of thousands of acres so that we can maintain our love of the outdoors and get out and hike and bike and hunt and fish and do all those things that we love to do. You know, we get one voice for 1 million Montanans at the U.S. House of Representatives. That voice should be somebody who reflects the values of Montana, who has a record of accomplishment, and who's always going to put Montana's people, land, and economy first.
Ryan Zinke, the Republican candidate. 2 minutes. Thank you. Please.
Well, Rick, I am endorsed by the NRA. I have an A rating. And Denise, two procedure votes in a bill that gets defeated, doesn't have 25% of the vote, is not a critical vote. But leadership's the same. Whether you're dropping off a helicopter or bucking the party, as I have bucked the public lands in LCW or LWCF, I have bucked the party multiple times. It's the same. I don't yield to pressure. I'll yield to higher principle, but I don't yield to pressure. And as a sole congressman of Montana, I'm proud to represent everyone in this room. It doesn't matter to me whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or a Libertarian or an Independent. I represent Montana because I love my country. I love my state. I understand the responsibility of making sure everyone in this room has an equal say in a future. We all rise and fall on the same tide. And we're all Americans first. I've never viewed life through a red or a blue lens. To me, it's always been red, white, and blue. The first thing I did when I took office is I put a plaque. This office belongs to the citizens of Montana. It's not mine, it's yours. So if you believe the same things that I do, a strong America, secure borders, an economy that's vibrant, an energy that's all the above, lower taxes, less regulation, our constitutional rights are non-negotiable, then I'm asking you for your vote. If you don't believe in that, then vote for somebody else. But remember this, we are all Americans first. So I ask you for your prayers. I ask you for your vote. And God bless the great state of Montana, America, and all those who defend her. Good night.
Thank you very much. Good night. Thank you for coming. Thanks to Great Falls College. Thanks to our candidates. Thanks to our panelists. And thank you.